is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Alex Crook is going to join the program later on this hour as we'll get a sneak peek of what he likes today in Argentina against England, certainly Spain moving on to the final. And later on in this program, Adam Burke's going to join the show, as well as Wes Reynolds breaking down everything from the last major of the year in England. But Jensen, the All-Stars were on display last night in Philadelphia. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
You know, you mentioned it, me, you, and Will Hill were texting last night, and you do get nostalgic a little bit sometimes watching this All-Star game and, you know, joking about waiting for your Mets to get in there when you're a kid. I still love the Midsummer Classic, Jensen. Maybe a little bit lackluster after three runs in the first yesterday, but great pitching was on display. Cody Bellinger is the MVP after that two-run single in the first. The American League 4-0 shutout over the Nationals. What'd you make of the Midsummer Classic?
Dave, this was gorgeous. Great pitching, beating great hitting. That's exactly what you're looking for. I don't know who else would think that you'd want to see a lot of runs scored. Talking to a pitcher here, this was amazing theater. I kid, obviously, but I did think our under was dead in the first inning. Christopher Sanchez having all kinds of command issues. They get three runs, the American League does there. I thought our under was toast, but great job by the American League hurlers after that. A shutout there, Cody Bellinger, couple RBIs. He was 50-1 day before the game to win MVP. So congrats to him. Big win. Nearly swept the board for the All-Star bets yesterday. Just had that Kyle Schwarber to record a hit that didn't get across the line. All's well that ends well. We move on to the second half of the season starting tomorrow.
Yeah, great call by you. You had American League in the under. Both those tickets cashed rather easily after that first inning. And very quickly, you know, we talked about it on the program yesterday, and I almost nibbled on it, but this is why I don't do these awards markets. Like, to me, it was Dylan Cease with the three strikeouts in the first, and he was north of 100-1. We talked about it on the program yesterday. If Dylan Cease can't get that award, Jensen, can a pitcher ever win this thing?
Yeah, they can. But I'm with you. Objectively, this is why Lewis Ross administration, one of the constitutional amendments that we will probably have is that there must be objectivity in awards markets. There currently isn't in these great United States. We will change that on day one. No question about it.
Yeah, subjectivity might have burned a ticket if you had Dylan Cease yesterday. You probably should have cashed that one. If you had those Spain tickets over France, you can cash those for sure today. They advanced to the World Cup final on Sunday. First time since 2010, and our esteemed producer Joe Friso was even lamenting, like, boy, it feels like Spain, I don't want to say that they've underperformed in their history, but it is surprising, Jensen, that this is only their second World Cup final. I know that's neither here nor there for them in the present day. They're excited to be there against the winner of Argentina and England today. But has Spain been a little bit underrated and undervalued before that lead up to France yesterday?
Dave, can I take you back to their first match against Cape Verde where everyone was like, what is happening? Oh, my God. If you can't beat Cape Verde, there's no way that you're going to be able to get through Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, Austria, Portugal, Belgium, France. Hey, one goal conceded through the whole tournament. Epic run. Second time, as you mentioned, that they have made it to the World Cup final in their history. They await the winner of another super-duper matchup here between Argentina and England later on this afternoon.
And that's what we're going to get. By the way, Spain has now vaulted to odds-on favorite at -$1.50. You talk about this a lot, Jensen, where, you know, whether a rollover play might be invoked today with England and Argentina. Have you already gotten to the window here in this second semifinal today?
Yeah, I big swing for me yesterday on France in a lot of different markets did not come to pass. So we re-rack and we get ready to fire again. And I am going to ride one of the hottest players here in this tournament, Jude Bellingham, to score anytime at 3-1. Also going to take some on Messi, of course, for Argentina. I do like, Dave, both teams to score in the 90 minutes here, -$1.10. And I'll play a little bit plus money on some other markets here. Over 2.5, +$1.56. Harry Kane, I'm going to get in on +$1.63. I'll do a little hedge, if you will, on the 90-minute draw at almost 2-1. Obviously, playing the over 2.5, I still think we get offense here. But ultimately, I think Argentina finds a way. I'll play them at plus $1.11 to advance into the final. But I think we are set up for a fantastic match in Atlanta. It is going to be fun to watch both these sides. It's a shame one of them has to go away. But man alive, what theater we'll have later on at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Lionel Messi, by the way, Jensen, is vaulted to a massive favorite now to win the Golden Boot, even though technically Kylian Mbappe, who still has another match to play. We don't know who France is going to play for the third place game, but Messi is now $1.75. If you like Jude to score today, he's 14-1. Would you take a nibble? That boy, if he got two and Messi didn't score, all of a sudden you're knotted up for three guys at 8 goals.
Boy, great call. I may have to look at that, may have to consider it. I think there is real legs, if you will, to where he's at. His high danger chances, to use a little hockey terminology, he has been right in the middle of the foray here the last handful of matches, so might be prudent. I'll take a shop around here and see if the best number I can find in that market.
Even though I'm not very good with time differences, Jensen, I will be napping today so I can get up early tonight before our show tomorrow so I can start watching the first round of the Open Championship over there in England. Now, I know the sentimental choice there at Royal Birkdale will be their favorite son, which is Tommy Fleetwood. There's a bunch of Englishmen that are going to be playing here. And this is Tommy's home course. He used to sneak on it as a kid, literally walkable for Tommy. As an adult, he really hasn't played it that often, which is kind of ironic here. But Jensen, you know, we talked a lot about legacy and our number one. Please go back, like, subscribe, Veasan by the Books podcast. Scotty Scheffler talking about, you know, his legacy and what winning these type of tournaments means to him. Well, it's kind of easy when you've won a bunch of them and you've already won a British Open, as Scotty has. Tommy, not only has he not won an Open Championship, he hasn't won a major to date. And maybe he's that guy, Jensen, that has the mantle now of best player on tour not to have won a major. That's debatable. But Tommy knows he's one of those guys. So he was asked about it and what it would mean to win not just a major, but this major.
I don't think I want to sort of look towards the future and worry about or think that I have to win a major to feel fulfilled. I think, you know, like everyone else out here, we spend our lives giving it everything. And, you know, it might happen for me, it might not. And, I don't want to think about it as, you know, if it doesn't happen, oh my God, like, you know, all of those hours I spent, you know, chasing my dreams, what was it for kind of thing. So, whatever happens in my career, I will have, you know, I'll be able to look back and say that I gave it everything. I had an amazing time doing it. I would definitely much prefer to have a major or two or three, on my resume by the time my career's over. So whether that happens or not sometimes is out of your control, but I think making sure that you have a great time chasing it is the ultimate thing.
19-1 for Fleets to get it done. I don't know that there'd be a more popular choice. Maybe a Justin Rose if he could win there, you know, the Englishman as well. But Jensen, you saw the wry smile come over his face. He's very serious answering that question in the beginning. Then when he said, boy, but it would be nice to get one, two, or three. You know, so I guess you have to say my career can't just be based on whether or not I win a major. I get that. But you know how badly you could tell that he absolutely not only wants to win a major at this one. I don't have him on any of my tickets. I worry about the pressure of playing in front of that home faithful this week. Do you as well?
Yeah, he won't be on there for me. Good old Tommy boy going to tee off right around 5:09 Eastern time. And we'll see if we can wipe the sleep out of our eyes here before we take the air tomorrow, a couple hours after that. A couple of guys that I'm very high on, Tyrrell Hatton, Scotty Scheffler, going to be paired with Bryson DeChambeau, one of our no-fly zone guys. I have played him to miss the cut. Victor Hoblin will be off before them. Also, I know a popular pick this week. I will be fading him as well. The consistency is going to be key, and how fast and firm this course is going to play, Dave. We visited with the great Rex Hoggard yesterday. He's out there on the ground. I saw Smiley on social media also say
Smile Coffin,
crispy,
yeah.
crispy is the is the adjective he wore. All right, let's go. It's going to be 80s tomorrow and Friday. It's going to cool off on Saturday and Sunday. May the best man win. And excited to see who the champion golfer of the year will be once we get underway.
One of the best to ever play it, and maybe the best to ever play it, Jack Nicklaus chimed in on social media yesterday because the Golf Channel, I believe Golf Digest, had posted his picture at the birthplace of golf over there at St. Andrews. And it was the last time Jack had ever played, and he made a birdie putt on 18, just rammed it in. He said this of that putt: "I knew the hole would get in the way of that putt. Hope everybody enjoys the Open this week and that all the players make some lasting memories. I know I did every year, including my last at the home of golf." Still get kind of chills thinking about that. You know, we're talking about looking back for Scottie Scheffler. He's only 30 years old. Enjoy this when you're in the moment. I will say this too, and I was talking about the winning score, and I was discussing this with Lou Finocchiaro a little bit yesterday as well. That 267.5 is what we're seeing. Remember, we did this show 3 weeks ago, Jensen, and we ran a soundbite from Rory over there, already playing at Royal Birkdale, while everybody was over here in the, toiling in the States. He was already in England, already getting a heads up on this golf course. And he said 3 weeks ago, the rough was up, and it was very dense. And he said yesterday, that's not what it is now, Jensen. It's burnt out. It's almost like hay, if you will. They can power through that. So I don't know if I'm hearing bomb and gouge, but I know we're all fading some of these big bombers this week, like Bryson. I would just say, if it's thin rough, we might have to reevaluate that if these guys can power through it, and maybe an underplay could be the play at the end of the day. And that all rhymes. When we come back, let's do a check-in, a bold take that you had in the AL Central at the beginning of the year. How is it looking now? We'll do that next, right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge, but what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The VSiN NFL Betting Guide is out as we speak. So if you're going to bet those futures markets, win totals, divisional races, MVP, Roy, Super Bowl, or any of the above, our guide is going to help you get ahead of the market before training camps even begin. So inside, you're going to find breakdowns of all 32 teams, projected win totals, best bets from all of our experts, future analysis, power ratings, and so much more. You can get it today with our football special for just $175. The sooner you sign up, the more value you will get. You're going to get full access to everything we do across every major sport through the Super Bowl next year. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Going to have Alex Crook join the program here in just a little bit later on this hour. Talk all things World Cup. Now that we know Spain is one half of the way through, Adam Burke, our managing editor, and our Wednesdays with Wes are coming up before this show is done. But Jensen, let's get to Major League Baseball here and some of the bold takes you had in the betting guide. Some of those have been very, very profitable, even halfway through this year. And one guy that showed up at the Home Run Derby was a guy that you had very high hopes for at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, Munetaka Murakami to finish top three in American League Rookie of the Year voting. One of the better bold takes I had from our VSiN MLB betting guide. As you look at where we are right now on DraftKings in the Rookie of the Year market, only Kevin McGonigal, who is odds-on favorite right now, -245, is ahead of Munetaka Murakami, 7-1. And it is some serious distance between Murakami and then Samuel Basayo of the Baltimore Orioles, Kazuma Akimoto there for the Toronto Blue Jays. They are tied at 18-1 for the third betting choice there. So we did really well so far. White Sox tied for first place with the Cleveland Guardians. I did go to a couple of rookies for the Guardians and looked at a bold take. Chase DeLauder and Travis Bazzano would combine for 50-plus homers. Now, as we stand here, and I'll bring up the statistics here in a moment, as far as total homers go between Bazzano and also between Bazzano and DeLauder, Bazzano right now with 7 home runs. DeLauder has 11. So we're at 18. We got a little bit of ground to cover there to get to 50 total.
Yeah, could be done.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. The one that I had nailed that I didn't think would be as early as it was, Tarek Skubal of the Detroit Tigers, his workload catches up with him, and he sustains a midseason arm injury. Well, he sustained an arm injury a bit earlier than midseason, and it looked like it was going to derail Detroit for the entirety of their season. Well, the Tigers have caught fire here the last 3-4 weeks, and Tarek Skubal been coming back from that injury as early as he did, a medical breakthrough to say the least, knowing that the loose bodies injury has really been a huge issue for a lot of big-time pitchers, both starters and relievers. The Minnesota Twins, hey, they're alive and well. Byron Buxton plays 140 or more games. Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez both debut before the All-Star break, helping lead the Twins to a playoff berth. Well, Buxton is still on pace for 140 or more games. Walker Jenkins, Emmanuel Rodriguez yet to make their debut. The Twins, though, a couple of games outside of a playoff berth as we begin the second half here later this week. So that's nice. The one that you and I are sad about, we were both very high on the Kansas City Royals this year. My bold take for Kansas City, the Royals win 90 or more games and capture the American League Central Division title. Neither of those things are happening this year. But again, as we've got through these bold takes, Dave, more positive, more on point than those that are not. So the AL Central, my backyard here, not a bad prognostication from a handful of months ago.
No, and I'm right there with you in the Titanic that is the Kansas City Royals. And I'm just looking at this rotation as to why I liked it so much, right? With Waka and Lugo and Bubic and Cameron. Even Colex was good until he got injured. But then you get Bubic goes down early in the year. And the guys I was more concerned about were the veterans, like Waka and Lugo. They've been pretty darn good, as we've seen, certainly from Waka's side here. Jensen now, it was the back end of the bullpen that killed them when they were still competitive, right? They just, like Ursic, just couldn't get the job done. And they kept blowing games early in the year that would have mattered this time of year. Now that they don't seem to matter, that's the team that I look at and go, look, I don't know that there's a market for a Salvi Perez if it's time to hang him. I'm never going to retire players. But I look at those guys like Waka and Lugo, and I got to think there's real value out there in the trade market for teams looking to go get a veteran on their roster. I actually still like their lineup. It's one of those bizarre things for one of the absolute worst teams in baseball. But you could look at the roster overall and totally understand, I think, what we were getting at with the Royals at the beginning of the year. It just has not played out that way. What do you do now? Is it just the starting pitching that you start to put on the scrap heap and just start make deals? Or would you look at positional players too and say, if there really is a market for an aging, you know, soothsayer like a Salvi Perez behind the plate, that you would consider dealing a guy like that?
So it sounds like from what JJ Piccolo, their president of baseball operations, it doesn't sound like they're going to deal Waka.
Wow.
I don't know about Lugo. Again, he's, you know, going to be almost 37 at the end of this season.
Right.
Waka, another all-star berth. They traditionally like to hold on to those kind of players. I look at Elaine Thomas, who could end up being, you know, a utility guy on a contending club.
Good player.
Here's how bad the Royals have been. He's hitting cleanup for them right now. That's how bad their year has been. Back end of the bullpen, you know, we'll see. That's been an issue. So it's not like a lot of people are going to come look for them. Here's how I'd handicap the Central right now. You begin play on Friday with 3 games separating the Guardians, the White Sox, and the Twins. And if you want to include the Tigers have been hard charging. They're just 6.5 back. I would say, and I've told you this before, it sounds like the tea leaves are the White Sox are going to be active. They're going to be aggressive. You absolutely want to bolster this run and this momentum that you've had. They got a tricky road trip to start the second half. They'll be north of the border to take on the Blue Jays, and then deep in the heart of Texas to take on the Rangers before they come home against the Astros. I would anticipate them looking towards a starting pitcher. I would anticipate them looking towards a back-end closing-type reliever. You can never have too much offense, but right now they're fourth in the big leagues in homers. They're top 10 in scoring, so I don't think they've got to really press too much for a bat there. I would focus on where Cleveland and Detroit are at the moment, because those are the two teams. The Guardians, obviously defending American League Central champions. They are due to get Jose Ramirez back here in a handful of weeks. That's a huge, huge bolster for their lineup and their defense. They've got the pitching. They're fine there. They need a bat, and then they need another bat. I think that is where I'm intrigued at the deadline for Cleveland. Can I buy them from a divisional future standpoint? Dave, I have a hard time seeing them pull this trick again for what they accomplished last year. And they came back from being down 15 and a half games. Would you rather hit your wagon to the Guardians, odds on now to $1.05 to win the Central? Or do you want to take your shot on the White Sox at 2-1? Do you even entertain the Twins? Or do you think the Tigers pull this comeback and do what the Guardians did to them last year, coming back from double digits down? And at 7-1, would you want to invest at least have a share of the Motor City Kitties to run down the top spot in the American League Central?
You're already getting into my mind as to exactly where I was going. I would have to look at the Tigers very carefully at 7-1 at this juncture with the ground they've already made up here as we get to the All-Star break. But you just mentioned it. The Guardians were 15 and a half games back. At what point of the season? Was that in August? Or was it still late July? Because, look, okay, this sounds absurd. And it is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. Nobody bet this. The Royals are 250-1, and they're 13 games back. Now, I get it. It was 15 and a half, and it was kind of just one team you had to leapfrog. But remember, back then, the Guardians were – I don't even know if they were just in, they weren't in second place. They'd come all the way back to make that incredible run, right? So I don't know that it's possible, but if the Royals don't sell and they still have this framework, I don't know that they can flip this script and play ridiculous baseball, which would be what, Jensen, 750 baseball? They'd probably have to play down the stretch to even make this viable. But 13 games, the reason why I say that is, not to say it's only 13 games, but when it was 15 and a half a year ago and that was actually done, and they're not selling, what does that tell you? They actually think they can make some sort of run here?
Oh, yeah, they can. Their offense is really emboldened them, too, for what it's now the last month that they have really been one of the top offenses in the big leagues. I'm not advocating for you to do this, but if I were forced to make a lottery ticket division winner parlay, it would be the Tigers in the Central, and it would be the Marlins in the National League East. Those two combined, Dave, that's 111-1 if you want the lottery ticket for the division winners right now.
Don't threaten me with a good time. That sounds absolutely fantastic. Okay, when we come back, let's get back into the NFL here. Our football season, it's right around the corner. And let's go to Skoll up there in Minnesota and see what they might have on the table this year. That's next right here on VSiN by the Book.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
$30 million in guaranteed prizes cash in this football season in Las Vegas with three circus sports contests, entries starting at $1,000 apiece, all with no rig. That means every single dollar stays in the prize pool. Circa Millions is 18 weeks, 128 ways to win. Jensen and I are in that one. Circa Survivor, you're going to pick one winner each week, and the last one standing wins. How about Circa Grandissimo, you ask? Well, that's for the high rollers. It's a $100,000 entry for that. You have to enter in Las Vegas, in Nevada. Play from anywhere in the United States once you do that. So $30 million guaranteed. All you have to do is visit circasports.com for all of the details. We are excited for our football season here in America. We're going to talk about the Purple People Eaters today. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
Hut, hut.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
Oh, boy. Depending on who you listen to, Jensen, do you have a quarterback in Minnesota? Is it Kyler Murray? Is it J.J. McCarthy? I don't know. Like, you know, people say things when they get pulled over by police officers. It's just, it's very odd when you look at the Minnesota Vikings and what people presume they may or may not have at the quarterback position. Now, look, Kevin O'Connell is regarded as a quarterback whisperer, right? KOC. Well, he better be doing some serious whispering this year if you're going to get that win total over 8.5. To make the playoffs, plus $1.66 to win the North, very competitive division, we know that, 5-1. Can they go to the Super Bowl? 22-1, and win it would be 45-1. Now, again, I'm going to look quarterback, and I'm going to look head coach first and foremost when I'm looking in the futures market here. I do like KOC, but when you talk to people in Minnesota, Jensen, the luster might be off of that ever so slightly. They moved on from the GM because I think they're going to say, well, the GM, the old GM who's no longer there, was the reason why they moved on from Sam Darnold, and maybe Kevin O'Connell wanted to keep Sam Darnold right there in Minnesota. Now you're choosing between J.J. McCarthy and Kyler Murray. Maybe not the best choices. Where are you in this football team? I love the defense. I do like the head coach. I'm just not sure about the quarterback position right now.
Don't forget about our good friend Carson Wentz returned, retained his veteran depth there. Yeah. Okay. Yes. We say this when we look at all of these teams, right, Dave? We start with the trigger man, and that is the biggest question mark for the Minnesota Vikings. The complementary weapons are really good. Okay. With Justin Jefferson, arguably the best receiver in the league. Jordan Addison, they exercised his fifth-year option. They brought in Juwan Jennings from San Francisco, obviously the physicality, high effort receiver there who's going to be great. They did restructure Aaron Jones's contract on a short term deal. They got Jordan Mason to come back. They did lose Jalen Naylor, who ended up being a big, big sign for the Las Vegas Raiders. And then, you know, the defensive side, Brian Flores' crew, one of the strengths of this group. They did let go of Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen. They did trade Jonathan Grenard to the Eagles for some draft capital. They were pretty heavy defensive line-wise in the draft, too. Remember, first selection, number 18 overall, was Caleb Banks, the big D lineman from the Florida Gators. Also, Dominique Orange from Iowa State in the third round. So I think for me, as I look at them, this idea of bringing Kyler Murray in was supposed to be low cost, maybe high reward. Is it a higher risk? Certainly is. The injury issues, the inability to stay healthy long term, that is a problem. Interior defensive line to replace Hargrave and Allen, I think they may get some answers there. But I feel that you're going to at least, bottom line, if all things are equal, Dave, they should have a really good defense again, meaning they should stay in games. Okay. The offense has the ability to be significantly better. They can only be significantly better if they have consistent quarterback play. So we are back to square one of actually have to see what these guys do, both Murray and McCarthy. And Dave, I don't know, I'll ask you, like, can we glean enough out of camp and out of two preseason weeks to really feel convicted about this team long-term, whether it is Kyler Murray or J.J. McCarthy? Because I had to tell you better be right from the start. Packers and Bears, out of the chute. You're 0-2 in the division? Holy Lord, this is going to be a long year for KOC and company.
The tentacles are pretty astounding as to why you fire Kwesi Adofo-Mensah as the old GM. You let him go, and Sam Darnold goes and wins a Super Bowl with Seattle. So who do they replace the GM with? Somebody from Seattle. Nolan Teasley, who was part of the reason that they brought Sam Darnold to Seattle. And now he's the GM in Minnesota. I mean, it's kind of like trading places here. Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd back in the 80s. So we're flip-flopping it, right? They got it right in Seattle. They got it wrong in Minnesota. Let's bring in the guy in Seattle that helped make that move and make that right there. Well, now, when you do bring in Kyler Murray, and there's already a disconnect between those two guys. If you remember, we ran that sound, oh, my goodness, 2 months ago, Jensen, of like J.J. McCarthy, very competitive about this thing. And you heard from Murray, the old veteran, like, oh, I'm trying to help the guy. And, you know, JJ is basically saying we're not even speaking. So clearly we have got a disconnect as to who thinks they're going to be the number one guy. I think it's going to be Kyler Murray. And I think if you're backing an over at 8.5, evenly priced, by the way, at -$1.10, that you better hope that it's Kyler Murray. It's not that it's not repairable for J.J. McCarthy. And it might not even be all his fault with the injury. And you missed the whole rookie of the year. Then you come back last year and you get memed the way you're preparing for a game. It, like, all of that is not his fault, Jensen. But that's what happens now. And then you become a caricature of yourself a little bit. And it's hard for other grown men in that locker room, 52 other guys, to then rally behind you. Now, Kyler's an interesting one because we heard about those leadership qualities or the lack thereof in Arizona for a number of years. So you get two guys that have been given different opportunities at different times and maybe didn't fully grasp said opportunities. I do feel like for Kyler, and we talked about this in the offseason, right? Not to say that we would have gone out there and given him another shot, but we theorized somebody would. And it was, and as it turned out to be, Minnesota, that he would get another shot as a former number one pick. I do believe this will be his last opportunity to really take hold on a new team. Could bounce around as a backup. Who knows what that looks like. But again, we've given the numerous examples from the Geno Smiths to the Sam Darnolds to the Baker Mayfields. The league is littered with guys that have gotten second, third opportunities around the league, maybe even fourth in the case of Geno Smith. So this is a big one. But if you're backing Minnesota in the overplay, and look, Brian Flores, the defense, I'm with you. They're going to be the constant for this team. It is now KOC. It is now the offense. It is now the quarterback that we have the questions. We have not had those really in the past that much. I would maybe hold my nose a little bit and play the over and hope that Kyler Murray realizes he doesn't have to do a ton to get the most out of this football team to potentially be a 10-win team and sail over that total of 8.5 and rely on that defense. But Jensen, if you start to put it all on him and his legs, I think that's where problems could arise if you're backing that over.
Okay. If they hit their over, then this division, I mean, it is going to be a war of attrition. Does 10 wins yeah. win this division? It just might. And if that's the case, here's what I would do. If you are bullish and they can survive this first half and have quarterback continuity, I don't even care if it's Murray or McCarthy. I want continuity. I want symmetry. I would take a unit and I would split it this way. I would take 3/4 of it. And this is if you're bullish. I'd take 3/4 of it and put it on the Vikings to make the playoffs at +$1.54. And then I would take the other quarter unit and put it on them to win the North at +510. I think that you can look at this division and say wholeheartedly, yes, the Bears won all those comeback wins last year. Traditionally, that does not transfer year over year. Packers, all the injuries, the wide receiver room, interesting year for Jordan Love contractually. And then the Lions, we assume a bounce back. We assume, but when we do that in the NFL, you usually get bit. So not saying that this is pretty cut and dry, but this is more so on the optimistic glass half full side. If you're going to play the over, you might as well get some better ROI on a make the playoffs price. Cause if you win 10 games, the Vikings, you're probably finding your way to the NFC postseason.
Here's the hard part for me. Cause again, I just alluded to the fact that I do love their defense and obviously the way they run things on that side of the ball. I don't have any questions there. And I mentioned, you know, you can't put this all at the feet, literally and figuratively, of Kyler Murray. But then I look at the running game and we're bringing back Aaron Jones. I love Aaron Jones, but what year is this, Jensen? Like, that's what you, Jordan Mason, we're running back the same backfield that, man, I don't know that gets me very excited. And what that tells me, Jensen, is you still have to get the ball on the outside to JJ and Jordan Addison. And what does that mean? That I'm going to have to rely on Kyler Murray. So good luck with that. That's what we're talking about here when you kind of do those X's and O's. How do you get there? You're going to get there through the arm of Kyler Murray to those talented wideouts. So that's the way you're going to get to 9 wins if you're going to get there at all. Who's going to win the World Cup? Is it Spain? They're now the odds-on favorite. Does Alex Crook agree that they should be? We'll discuss next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned into VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Wednesday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. Always look forward to catching up with Alex Crook. He, of course, does a great job. Talk Sport chief football correspondent. Give him a follow on X at Alex _ Crook, and kind enough to join us here in the Progressive Guest Line from New York City. Getting ready for a big one today with Argentina and England. Of course, Spain awaiting the winner on Sunday. Alex, before we break down these matches today, you've been in New York City now for about a month. Has the luster of the United States worn off, or is it still so far all good 30 days in?
30 days in New York is a long time. I did have a trip to Miami in between for England's last game, which was absolutely phenomenal experience. Started the tournament in Dallas. I've got to say, of the three places I've been, I went to Houston as well, actually. New York feels like the one least invested in the World Cup. I don't know if that's because it's such a big city and it's also spread out, but that sort of World Cup fever doesn't really seem to be in evidence here, whereas it certainly was in Miami. We had a big influx of England fans, and the Texans are really getting into this tournament as well. You've seen the reaction that Erling Haaland has had, the way that he's embraced that Texan culture. Not quite feeling that in New York.
Yeah, Alex, if you do take the stuffed raccoon home, make sure you check that. Don't carry that on and induce some panic. But I got to tell you, you've hit the trifecta of some of the most humid and hot places this time of year. Hitting to South Beach, good God, how you guys survived that is one thing. Thank God the game was indoors yesterday, and obviously will be again today. Let me get your quick reaction from what you watched yesterday in Dallas there. Spain about as efficient as you could be. Also the early goal, I think, kind of threw France off. But your take on just how dominant Spain have been in this run to the final.
Yeah, I thought it was a phenomenal performance from Spain, to be honest, and a really disappointing one from a French perspective. Now, a lot of that was because Spain never gave them the chance to play, never gave them the chance to have any possession, but their big guns didn't fire, did they? The fact that Lise was taken off when they were chasing the game tells you all you need to know about his performance. And I thought Kylian Mbappe was playing for himself more than his country. So big question marks, I think, about France. And people back home in England have been saying, well, that's the first time really France have faced decent opposition at this World Cup, and they've been found wanting. And actually, I think that assessment is pretty fair.
You know, Alex, it is, I think, for some rather stunning to see that 2-0 victory. Now they've catapulted themselves to be odds on favorite at minus -$1.50 against either Argentina or England. I'll be curious, depending on the result today, who do you think would pose a better threat to Spain come Sunday?
Oh, I think it's a flip of a coin, to be honest. I think neither England or Argentina have yet hit top gear in these knockout stages. So I don't think Spain would fear either of them. In fact, again, out for dinner with some colleagues last night, the question we were asking was, well, what's the point? You know, no one's going to beat Spain in the final. How on earth do you get the ball off this Spanish team? So, yeah, obviously they're the favourites because they're the ones who are guaranteed a place in the final. But I think they're going to go into it as favourites, whoever they face, be it England, be it Argentina.
Yeah, and Alex, let me ask you tactically, because yesterday, two whole different ways of going about it. France were so incredible at scoring. Spain been just historic in only conceding the one goal up to this point. Will we see a little more wide open, high event match this afternoon with both these offenses?
I think we will, because I don't think either England nor Argentina have covered themselves in glory defensively. Obviously, Argentines conceded twice to Cape Verde. They conceded twice to Egypt. Should have been three with that controversial goal that was disallowed. England falling behind against DR Congo in the round of 32. They were 20 minutes away from not being here at all beyond that first knockout round. Obviously, conceded twice in the Azteca, albeit they had 10 men for a lot of that game. And they didn't look defensively watertight against Norway. So I think this is going to be a much more different contest. I think both managers will be astute enough to know their best form of attack is defence. And I'm expecting an absolute thriller, because as good as that was from Spain yesterday, because they were so dominant, it wasn't the head-to-head that we expected. I think we are going to get that drama today.
Well said. And Alex, I think some people on the surface level are going to say, well, it's going to come down to Kane against Messi, and whoever is the star of stars, then their nation's going to advance. Is it as simple as that, or can we get more layered and say if those two guys can neutralize each other, who would have the advantage past that?
I think Jude Bellingham could be the key to this contest. You know, as much as Harry Kane is on six goals, I think Bellingham has been England's standout performer. This tournament, from an English perspective, has been one of moments, and most of those moments have come from Bellingham. So if he can fire, I think we've got a tremendous opportunity. But obviously, we've got to be aware of the great Lionel Messi. Controversially, I would leave Declan Rice out of this game. I would push Nico O'Reilly up into a midfield role so that he can do a man-marking job on Messi.
Alex, my highest conviction looking at the board was Bellingham. I've got him at 3-1 for an anytime goal here. I did take some shares of Messi and Kane as well at a smaller price point. But let me ask you just tactically, from a betting perspective, do we feel that this is numbers forward early, or is this a feeling out first 15, maybe into the first hydration break there? Can we see maybe some high events early? And I'm more getting you to get your feel on an over 2.5. And I realize that that would have to be in regulation plus stoppage time. Would we be remiss if we didn't get a both teams to score? Like, it just feels like there's balance here for both sides from a betting perspective.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same wavelength. In a betting column that I write, I've actually put up Bellingham to score at 3-1 as one of my best bets. And I've gone over 3.5 goals in 90 minutes. My prediction is 2-2 after 90 minutes, and then England win it 3-2 in extra time.
Oh, I absolutely love that, Alex. You know, when you mentioned France and how disappointing the result was, and maybe the effort could have been even more disappointing, or at least as flat as you mentioned that they looked. If there was to be a squad today that could have that kind of shock of like, wow, where was that team? How did they not show up? And I know France was the overall favorite to win this tournament. That's why it was even more shocking. Who do you think that pressure could fall on more? Would it be the reigning defendings in Argentina, or would it be England?
Again, there's not much in it. Obviously, England have not won a World Cup since 1966, not been to a final since 1966, never been to a World Cup final on foreign soil. So the pressure of history is there. But for Argentina, the chance to win back-to-back World Cups in what is probably going to be Messi's final World Cup tournament, I think that brings its own pressure and expectation. This is going to be the most epic result since 1966 for England, for all the reasons that I've said. But also, although we've done well in major tournaments of late, we've got to European Championship finals, we've got to a World Cup semi-final in 2018, we were quarter-finalists, unlucky to lose to France 4 years ago. Whenever we come up against opposition that we're on a level with, or maybe even they could be viewed as being slightly better than us, we lose. So we need that result. We need to beat one of the big heads and really send out a statement to the rest of the world. And this is a huge opportunity to do that.
All right, Alex, let me pivot you ahead here to a couple of hypotheticals, because still an opportunity in the golden boot race here for some drama to unfold. And I think, and I'll get your thoughts on the handicap hypothetically, Mbappe, and I'm with you that I thought he was incredibly selfish in the way that he played. It feels like the ego not only got the better of him, but now in a quote-unquote meaningless third place match, is the motivation there regardless of opponent? So let's say, if it is Argentina that fall to England, and that third place match still has both Mbappe and Messi tied atop the golden boot race, is there value anywhere here in that? Or today, would you want to take a little longer price at either Kane at 9-1, Bellingham at 14-1, in case this is the England-Spain final where everything is on the line?
Well, if it is England-Spain in the final, I don't expect a lot of goals. So that would put me off Kane and Bellingham, because you mentioned the Spanish defensive record. If Argentina lose, I think Messi would almost certainly start that third and fourth place playoff, because he will want the golden boot. With France, I'm not sure Mbappe would be so desperate to play. So with that in mind, I think my play would be Messi at this stage.
So, Alex, let's get down to the brass tacks here. You've got England winning this thing in a thriller, 3-2. That would put them hypothetically against Spain come Sunday. We know Spain would be the small favorite. If you project now to that Sunday final, England-Spain, how would you see that game playing out?
I'd be worried, because I think the Spanish are so good defensively. They have the ability to control games in a manner we've not seen from England so far. So if you're asking me to nail my colours to the mast, I would be on Spain, unfortunately.
All right. And the country, England, are they nervous this morning, or are they more excited
about
this match with Argentina?
I think they're petrified, but excited in equal measure for the reasons I've said. That this is a fixture that comes with great history. There's no love lost between the two countries. There's been some iconic World Cup moments in the past, and everybody is going to be crammed into the pubs probably from lunchtime UK time, just building up to the tantalising prospect of a World Cup final. I can't quite get my head around the fact I could be there in New Jersey on Sunday watching England in a World Cup final against the European champions. And of course, it'd be a repeat, that European final.
Right.
Well, we're rooting for you. That'd be fantastic. We appreciate your expertise here. It's been great catching up with you throughout the entirety of this World Cup. Daily Diamond Baseball Talk, it's next. VSiN by the Books.